Latinos are the largest minority in America. They're a people united by culture and language, not race. Richard Rodriguez is an American of Mexican descent. He claims the color brown as his own. He calls his latest book Brown, The Last Discovery of America. Steve Paulson was curious about the new importance of brown.
Do you think we're living in a brown moment in America?
Yes, I do. And I think we're finally coming to acknowledge that we have, in fact, been brown for a very long time. I mean, we used to give Pulitzer Prizes to those dreadful historians at Yale and Princeton with their bow ties who wrote books about Thomas Jefferson and never told us about the brown children. And now we are beginning to know. Now we are beginning to talk about our brownness as a people. We are beginning to talk candidly, and people like Tiger Woods begins to talk about his relationship not simply to Africans, himself as an African, but also Tiger Woods as Thai. Tiger Woods is related to American Indians and to whites. That notion of brown that you get in Tiger Woods is, I think, still relatively new, but he's referring to something that is very old in the Americas. There isn't a single African-American friend of mine who has not said somewhere in the course of our friendship, oh, by the way, did you know that I'm part Indian, I'm part Sioux or Cherokee? And I say to them all the time the same answer, no, I didn't know that. Which chapter of the history book was that? Well, in fact, we don't really talk about that mixture, that marriage, except indirectly. And always it's at the edge of our history rather than the point of our history. You know, I come from a country, Mexico, which has written its story as originating within that brown moment in the Americas, the moment at which the Spaniard rapes or is seduced by the Indian, that moment of two races mixing, meeting, groaning or screaming, the child born from their meeting. That is the brown moment. Latin America has always been candid about brownness. It is in many ways as racist, if not more racist, than North America. But nonetheless, there is that candor throughout the Americas.
And that is really your ancestry. I mean, both the conquistador and the Indian.
Yes, the mestizo. And I mean, it seems to me that one of the things that Hispanics do in this, as we become such a sizable population, the children of Richard Nixon, I say in the book, because it was Richard Nixon who invented Hispanics in the early 1970s.
Wait, what do you mean he invented Hispanics?
Well, Richard Nixon, the Californian, the man who sort of peered 1 hour away from where he was born in Yorba Linda, California, saw the Asian horizon, another hour to the south, saw the Mexican border. Richard Nixon in 1972 presided over a redefinition of the United States as no longer a black and white country, but as a country, a pentagon, a country in five. It was Richard Nixon's administration which came up with the idea that we are white, black, surely, but that we are also Asian / Pacific Islanders and American Indians / Eskimos, and fifth but not least, we are Hispanic. Well, you can travel all over Latin America. You can go from Colombia to Peru up to Mexico. You can go down again into Bolivia looking for a Hispanic, and they will all tell you the same thing, that they don't see Hispanics in Latin America. You have to go to Dallas, Texas, or Madison, Wisconsin to see a Hispanic. Richard Nixon invented us here. This is what Americanized us, his term. Whereas my parents were apt to talk about themselves as Mexican and not even think of themselves in relationship to Puerto Ricans or Cubans or Colombian.
And you prefer the word Hispanic to Latino, don't you? Even though Latino is really the more politically correct word.
Yeah, Latino is a bore. Hispanic is more interesting just because it gets to it's a browner word, if I could use that term, because it is an English word to describe the descendants of Latin America. And it identifies me within that complexity of belonging to both sides of that Renaissance rivalry, England and Spain. By being Hispanic, I am brown. I am, again, both. And I like that predicament. Latino fudges the issue, of course.
So is this just a racial category that you're talking about, or the mixing of racial categories? Or when you talk about brown, are you talking about something bigger than just race?
Well, in part, I'm talking about the mixing of racial categories, but I'm actually talking also, since Hispanic is not a racial category, it mixes up the racial conversation of America. I routinely get invited to these dreary conferences where I am seated between black and white, and the assumption is that I represent some new brown race in America. I represent no such thing. I represent the end of racial distinction in America, because I come to the conversation prepared to say that I do not identify myself racially. by calling myself Hispanic, I identify myself culturally. To say that there are now 35, 36 million people in the United States who identify themselves as Hispanic is to say that there is in this country that has long thought of itself by reference to blood, this new emerging population that thinks of itself in reference to culture, to language, to religion, to memory, to geography. My mother watches Univision, the Spanish language network out of Miami, and she'll watch a quiz show, and there in the audience are black faces and white faces and brown faces. And she will say, pues, son Latinos, son Hispanos. She doesn't say, oh, there's a white Hispanic, there's a black Hispanic, there's a brown Hispanic. When she says they're Hispanic, she means that they participate within the culture of this language, of Univision, of this memory of Latin America that they participate in. That's a very revolutionary thing in the United States. And while we have been busy impersonating and I think misrepresenting ourselves as the new third race in America, applying for affirmative action, for example, under the rubric of being Hispanics, which I think is unjust, it gives us, those of us who are white Hispanics, benefits of minority status in America at the same time that it does not give, say, white Appalachian kids minority status. There's all this confusion right now in America, and I say good. The more confusion, the better. I'm tired of this black and white conversation.
But I'm wondering if it really makes that much of a difference to talk about culture rather than race. I mean, if you talk with African Americans, I mean, they're going to talk about culture as well and their history, their language, and all of that. And is this just a semantic argument here?
Well, it may be semantic, except culture can be exchanged. I can share my culture with you. I can put it on a plate and you can eat it. And it's at that level at which I can share culture that it seems to me that the moment is so promising, that we are borrowing each other's culture, and indeed we are borrowing each other's color. I mean, one of the things I'm struck with is that so many of the young people around me in San Francisco as I was writing have begun to experiment with color, with blue hair and green hair. And there was the King of Brown. I called Michael Jackson the King of Brown on his rock video, Morphing into All the Faces of the Earth. And there was Madonna, the Queen of Brown, today Marilyn Monroe, yesterday Eva Perón, tomorrow in a geisha. This new experiment with identity, it seems to me, it's very much of this brown moment. And it is a release from the destiny of blood, which I think many African-Americans, particularly young African-Americans I meet, still hold themselves to, and that is that they must be true to their culture, that they cannot even allow themselves the freedom to talk white, as they say. Well, of course, what I want for them is I want for myself, as I wanted for myself as a child, is exactly that white freedom to play with culture, to become anything I want, to become you.
Now, one thing I found interesting about your book when you were writing about your own background is you're very upfront about how when you were younger, you looked to black writers, not Mexican writers, for a sense of identity.
No.
I mean, those were the inspiring figures to you.
Yes, and you know, part of my rage right now at this moment is that I hear the Census Bureau describing Hispanics as replacing African Americans as the country's largest minority, and it seems to me an obscenity for us to pit ourselves against each other this way. It seems to me that one of the things we don't adequately understand is just how we teach each other in America, how we participate in each other's culture. Again, you know, there is that sense in which we are separate islands. There was a riot in Southern California a few years ago. At a high school, some Hispanic students were impatient because African-American students get 1 month for Black History Month and the Hispanic students get only 1 week for La Raza Week. So the Coke bottles started flying to the cafeteria and so forth. And no one bothered to tell them, apparently, that they participate in each other's culture, that the African is part of Latin America, indeed part of Mexico, or that alternately that to be a Hispanic is to be also related to Africa. That these are not separate months, separate weeks. We are not on separate bookshelves, although we are. At most bookstores, I find myself very far from the writers that I love, very far from the writers who have created me.
You're in the Hispanic section, I suppose.
I'm in the Latino section, Hispanic. We're just to the left of lesbians. And and it is lonely out there because so many of the writers I loved are way over there on the other side of astrology, you know, and it's an obscenity that we would have as the cost of our inclusion in the American conversation. The price we would have to pay for inclusion would be segregation.
Well, it seems to me there's a paradox in what you're saying, what you're doing, because really what your writing is all about is undermining the notion of race, certainly of racial purity, and you're celebrating the mixing together of race, of culture. But yet you're, to be unkind about it, you might say you write obsessively about race.
Yes, I do. I mean, it has caught me. You know, I wish I could write about the death of a moth. I wish I could be on a shelf with D.H. Lawrence. I wish I didn't have to write about social issues. I wish when I went to a university, it was the literature the department that would invite me. It's always sociology or political science. God bless them. But I'm not considered to be a real writer because I write about the issues that preoccupy a lot of Americans. And race, alas, is one of them. I also write about sexuality, but of course, in this case, ethnicity trumps sexuality. I'm never shelved gay. I'm shelved Hispanic. I mean, in these matters, you know, and then, of course, I write about my own Catholicism as gay, and the New York Times already has a gay Catholic, so they don't need me, and the New York Review is too busy with London right now, and so it's all rather confusing. But yes, my obsessions are these things, but you notice in my literary subversion, and I think of myself as a writer, when I write about the Indian in this book, that's in a chapter on Rodgers and Hammerstein and Broadway musicals. And when I write about Richard Nixon, that's in a chapter about Benjamin Franklin professional wrestling. You know, these obsessions of mine are not easy ones, and they confuse readers. People want to know, are you Ferd or Gynet? You know, I mean, the kind of conversation we have on CNN with one goofus, you know, representing the left and one goofus representing the right, and all of us are supposed to apply ourselves to one side or the other. I, as a writer, want to confuse. I want to give these issues a kind of texture that they normally don't get in the conventional discussion. When I talk of race, of course I want to subvert that very word and talk of love. Not because I want to be pious about it, but because what race memorializes for me is the way we have gathered ourselves to each other. And exactly within that notion of love is the impurity that I have always understood about my own loving. So yes, I write about race, but yes, I write also about other things. And the book ends with this evocation of Walt Whitman in the middle of the night when I'm laying next to the man I've lived with for 20 years. And I'm so angry at the fact that I belong to a church, the Roman Catholic Church, which now suffers its own embarrassment, but has embarrassed me for all of my life with its own teaching from the pulpit. I can't tell you how many times I've heard these skinny Samuel Beckett-looking priest at the pulpit tell me that it is not love that I feel at 4 in the morning, that in fact all of my loving is what the church calls a lifestyle, that I know nothing at all about love. And I hear Walt Whitman and the birds singing outside at 4 in the morning, of every hue and cast am I, he sings.
Richard Rodriguez ends his latest book with that quote from Walt Whitman, of every hue and cast am I. Rodriguez's book is Brown, The Last Discovery of America. We talked with Steve Paulson.